in a rather busy period, and production of the latter stages had already started.
This is early 66.
This is early 66. So I'll get into those charts in a minute. And first, let me tell you about the control room. And most of these things, I read your write-up. You've got the hang of it already. But I think what you want me to say is how do I see it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Stand up just more. I'm going to repeat some of the things you said in order to get my mind.
Well, that's fine, because I want to, you know, really get all this down on the tape for posterity here.
The Saturn V was... Let me interrupt a second. Roger, wait.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Dr. Rudolph, I think, will have to be given credit, or Curse Wildman, as the case may be, for this control room concept. This was inherent in Dr. Rudolph's philosophy of management. We both know that every manager of anything, from a lumber mill to Polaris missile, has his own idea about how to do things.
Right.
Some people get involved very personally. Some people delegate the heck out of things. Dr. Rudolph had a lot of traits, one of which was that he wanted to get all the management data. You're really breaking in, aren't you?
Now, for Roger, Tuesday 1:30, and he'd like me to come along and sit with us, and I'll be glad to do it.
Beautiful.
We'll do it Tuesday 1:30.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
About transferring knowledge into graphic form. Some people refer to this as a fetish for charts.
Yeah.
But there's much to be said for that. So he was one of the prime movers, although headquarters would probably say they have out there with it, in having room set up, and each chart in here is a summarization of what went on in a pyramid, as you well know. Saturn V, let's say the S1C stage office, the S1C contractor, and then all the S1C subcontractors. And this is a hardware fashion now. He had all this data feeding. Parallel to this, he had all these functional things that went on, which are a little bit more difficult to describe. He had a functional manager, you know, as we know, for reliability and quality, for mission operations, for systems engineering. And that man was responsible for going into each stage and going to other centers and keeping track of management across the entire stage.
The vertical.
The vertical thing. Yeah. And that data was displayed on charts. Basically, at one time, on this side of the room, this western end of this group, these were all hardware or stage-oriented charts, and those were all functional charts. And the only significance on that is that he attached just as much importance to the functional part as he did to the hardware part. Now, in addition to strictly hardware data, in order to know what his hardware problems, progress, trends, and so forth were on the Saturn V launch vehicle in totality, he had to know what was going on each stage. He therefore delegated to his stage manager the responsibility for accumulating all data related to his stage. Of course, the S1C stage manager, in turn, went to the S1C contractor. The S1C stage manager, as we both know too, and I don't mean to make this a little complicated, had lateral connections, you know, with these working panels, with the laboratories. So this thing was more complex than I'm drawing it right here. I mean, the S1C stage manager had to keep on top of how his electrical system was going, for example. And he also had to make contact with the engines people. At that time, the engines office was a separate office from Saturn V.
Yeah.
And so anyway, Rudolph says, all right, you, Mr. S1C, or you, Mr. Instrument Unit, go out and get all this data together. I don't plan to do it. What I want to see is a summarized situation for me, and I want this to be summarized in this control room, 319. And I want it in a graphic form, and I want it regularly, and I want somebody specifically responsible, as you pointed out, which is one of the key things to it. It wasn't an office or a group of people responsible. He had a person. You still see that person's name on these charts even to this day. That was responsible for making sure that information was correct. So all this data fed up, or some, as I say, in some cases it fed laterally, like in the engine's office or from R&D labs. And they summarize it. Charts like these. And others, which is a very standard method. This is just a waterfall or a sort of Gantt chart type of depiction of what activities are occurring on which stage. Now, the reason I've got this other set of charts out is that this entire control room has been an evolving process. As our problems change, what we show changes. Mm-hmm. And this thing is pretty well all done. The kind of outline over here, we're in a storage portion of S2. All the activity, all the building, the testing, and everything else has been done. But this will show you that this was all tracked. And it had a systematic method of showing whether an event was going to be early or late. And if an item was going to be late, then this thing was followed up. You got a red arrow, that's a problem area, mm-hmm. in addition to having the scheduled slide thing. And this was put on a big board over here.
The problem area?
We have two things to cover problem areas. We had one that was a problem area board, which listed the problem and who did what to take care of it, and what the status was, and so forth. And the other thing was on the overall schedule, which is still here. This was the whole Saturn V program thing. This gave Dr. Rudolph the overall view of the thing. And it went back even prior to President Kennedy's declaration that we're going to make it to the moon in this decade.
Master summary schedule, in other words.
Yeah. So here's JFK's decision in May 61. And here's final land on the moon, July 69. And all this stuff with program development, vehicle development, test facilities, test programs, showing all of these things. This was the big picture. And these large arrows stick out in different places. And everywhere you have an arrow, on this problem board, you had a problem list. You track that thing down until it got solved. I'll show you some charts in here. If the problem were of enough significance, he would make a special chart just for that problem. Generally, just listing it and using words was sufficient. Now, this is a sounds relatively minor also, but it was important in you've already written down, this control room represented the acme of data collection of Saturn V. It corresponded in every way, in symbology, in width of the bars, and everything, to the control rooms that the other centers had, that Washington had, and that the contractors had. And Dr. Rudolph, in fact, really get on with people. They didn't have it. They didn't have their triangles just exactly. They had theirs upside down to his. He didn't like that at all. Rudolph, most people feel like, was a nitpicker, a commonist, imperious. But what he really wanted, I think, was clear communication. He would just go on and on until everybody, he was sure, was saying the same thing, and knew that they were saying the same thing. You've been in a meeting many times, and everybody says, yeah, this is so, this is so, and this is so. And everybody that said it had a different idea. But Rudolph would wrestle this thing, and he would knead that dough until he knew everybody was on board, and he'd go to the next point. So all these control rooms were identical, and a great deal of effort was spent. The contractors weren't particularly happy because they had to display their data. Not only Rudolph, but they had to display it the way he wanted it seen. And they, in a number of cases, felt like they had better ways of doing it. You can imagine the Boeing company, they've been building planes, you know, since the, you know, the old P-26 and all this kind of stuff. So they felt like they knew how to run a program. But this didn't matter to Rudolph one whit. He wanted it done like this, and he was right, I think, because it enabled him to go and visit all the people under him that go and visit from place to place, and immediately the thought process was simplified. They didn't have to go learn all the symbology. And this, like I say, this sounds like a small thing. This is a, in the totality of Saturn V, this is a small thing. But in the matter of management, it sure saved a heck of a lot of time once it got set up. Let me show you some of the boards that he had. There were a number of special purpose charts here. He says, our number one objective here is to get 501, first Saturn V, down to the Cape and get that thing launched. So he's got stage development, he's got activities. See, these are battleship tests and so forth that must be accomplished prior to the deliverance of 501. These things were all related. So he's got this drawn out here and shows how the dynamic test vehicle, all the tests and all, are we going to get these things? Is this shaking going to get done in time? Are we going to get the results back? Will it be analyzed? And how does that tie in to the facilities checkout vehicle, which we're down to KSC? What sort of problems we're having? The whole thing gets back to the fact that this thing was it took place in so many diverse geographical locations with so many different companies, so many different organizations, that tying it all together was the problem. And much activity went into this tying together business. I think this is what Jim Webb was talking about. And he said he had never seen anything so pulled together. Anybody can make charts, but these charts represented a coherent display of data. And every major item could be tracked back down to its finest points. This isn't so obvious, especially today, looking back on it. I mean, you have to have been here almost to see some of this thing. But you can see the gist of this. You can see that he has things other than the 501 vehicle itself. Then he shows what's going on 501. You can see all these things, you know, like this is a milestone that's taking place early. And here's one that's early. And here's one that's late. And he's got major milestones, those circles around them, the intermediate milestones, and these. It's just all there in a very systematic manner. They wanted to track the activation
of the launch facility. Are we getting our GSC down there on time? So he's got all this graphically depicted, see? And Howard Burns was a test and checkout project manager. And Howard Burns couldn't direct anybody to do anything legally. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing. He was in charge of the test office. And he had no directive authority in the classical sense at all. And yet Dr. Rudolph looked to him to see that this whole thing was being done. So he had to get with the LVGSE manager. He had to get with the CAPE. Lord knows who all he had to get with. The Sanders display people up in New Hampshire or whatever. Rudolph didn't care. But Burns, in his opinion, was the functional manager to see that, that all the tests, well, he had tests, and one of the things under test he just allocated to him was this site activation thing here. There's a KSC detailed flow plan. Shows how that thing's going to be processed. Let me just cut through some of these. Here's a blow up. Remember, we showed the dynamic test program and how it fed into 501? Mm-hmm. This is just a blow up of the dynamic test program. One chart on it alone. So if you want to see, there were some little bitty tabs back there a while ago, says we got a little problem. You flip over then to the chart so-and-so, and you can follow this problem even more closely. And then here's the verbal problem area board I was talking about. The date the problem was reported. Identifying it. That is, what piece of hardware is involved?
The S2.
Yeah. And LC39500F checkout, see? Which ties into the fact we just had a chart on LC39500F checkout activation. Mm-hmm. He's got a man honchoing that thing. S2T captive firing program. And then it shows the status. Here it says, extremely tight schedule for system development facility, breadboard, and development and debugging of integrated GETS operating system programs. He estimates to deliver to KFC 16 March 66. Then he's got another thing that says, C display 40, which is 500F LC39 and SA501 tape requirements. So we just mentioned LC39 500F chart. He's got another chart on the 501 tape. That is the, you know, the control tapes, the launch vehicle digital control and the launch site. They had some tapes and all. So when a problem arose, it was expanded upon, excuse me, to the point necessary. This is another thing. Not only did he identify the problem, he said, fine, so we know that, we know the status. And we know that this man here is reporting this thing. Now, who are the points of commitment? He had a, Rudolph, I keep quoting Rudolph, because I really feel like he was the guy behind this thing. He didn't believe in systems alone. This looks like a massive system. He tied people into these systems. Under points of commitment, he says industrial operations, this is for the S21. He says industrial operations, certainly involved, an R&DO is involved, and a contract. Yeah. Then he says, who at each one of these places? Colonel Yarkin, Mr. Widener, and a fellow named Greer. Yeah. Now these guys, when he says points of commitment, that terminology in itself was debated, thrashed about, defined and redefined, and everybody was nauseous with it. Because nobody could quite decide what a point of commitment was. Some people want to say, well, it's the top man on the pile. He's the only guy that can really commit. But that really wasn't the case because, like in this project component qualification test programs, they got guys down at lower management levels that they could work this thing out. That's all Dr. Rudolph wanted to know. In other words, this tells you whether the problem was something that the top man in the organization, Colonel Yarkin, was the head of the S2 project at that time, or whether somebody at a lower point in the organization can solve the problem. That's all he was wanting to do. He wanted to find out who's working that thing.
Yeah.
And as I think I've told you before, I know I've been briefing people who have come in here. So many people from the Army to American Airlines have these control rooms, and they've got about four or five guys or something like that, and these guys run out and try to dig up all this data. They're just scroungers of data, and they come in and they make the best chart they can. And so when the vice president in charge of operations comes in, they say, okay, now here's a picture on American Airlines' progress. So-and-so, our passenger rate on the West Coast route, so-and-so, and they give them all this information. That's not the way this worked. There were people who kept up these charts, but they were simply hands of the people who were truly responsible. And that's the difference between, in my opinion, an active, efficient control room like this and just whitewash, you know, just hanging stuff out.
The people who are really involved in the actual operation work and, in fact, responsible for the chart.
That's right. And they have their name on the chart. The head of the office has his name. And then the man in that office, it didn't matter what his position was either. He didn't, I mean, first of all, they had to have an office symbol up there so they could, you know, you just had a name. You said, well, what office is he in? So they had the office chief to get you zeroed into that degree. Then they had a person, and he could have been just a plain engineer, or he could have been a branch chief, or whoever it was. That man was responsible for that data on that chart. And when he says it, when I say he was responsible for that data, that meant he had to collect it. He had to verify it. And he had to do this periodically. He had to really know what he was putting on there. Well, you came across those management matrices. That's the same thing. Rudolph wanted to show who was responsible for structural integrity of the S2 stage within the Saturn V program office, within the S2 project office, at North American Rockwell, in the R&D lab. He wanted to know who's responsible for structural integrity on the S2 stage. And we had that thing plugged out. It had a structural subsystem. It had a person. If you wanted to talk that subject, you'd get these guys together, and boy, you could talk that subject. There wasn't any doubt about, well, gee whiz, I don't know. I think that's the laboratory does that. And then you have to call the laboratory chief and go through some rigmarole. There's none of that. It was very specific. These are for the problem area things. Now, these problems I was just talking about, they could be anything from a technical problem to a financial problem to a contractual problem. See, there's no limitation on what these problems are. Now, here's a specialized chart. He had his engineering manager, Lou Bell, at the time. And Lou Bell picked out the major technical problem areas. He, as a systems engineering chief, here's a thing called uncontrolled instrumentation for captive firing tests, MTF, MSSC, SACTO, and Santa Susana. Apparently, they had a lot of different types of instrumentation for captive firing in all these places. And see, a stage might be fired at Santa Susana and then fired at MTF, and they couldn't correlate findings because the instrumentation was different. They may have it located in different ways, or it might have had a different range of pickup, and or you couldn't compare a thrust on the S4B stage with thrust on the S1C stage because they had it instrumented differently. See, the project manager for the S4B and a project manager for S1C could care less. Now, they were doing it the way they thought best. So here's where this functional manager comes in. He says, look, you fellows are doing this differently. We can't compare it. We've got to get this thing coordinated. The same thing would occur in reliability. One project office would be testing a LOX relief valve to certain criteria, and another stage office would be testing it to a different set of criteria, and you couldn't correlate the things. And Dr. Ruloff, as the program manager, says, look, this has got to be integrated. And that's why he put so much emphasis on the functional managers. I don't know that we'll ever have that much emphasis again. Maybe so. But as you think about it, you'll see why he had to have not staff members, but functional managers. Because he had so damn many pieces of hardware that had to fit together.
So the functional manager, in a sense, had the authority to say to the S1C and S4B, we've got to get the instrumentation together. And
he did.
And they had to do it.
Right.
And they could get together because if you had the right matrix chart, the S4B instrumentation manager could pick up a chart and see exactly who his counterpart was in the S1C thing.
Exactly.
And they could just get together and talk the same language and say, okay, we'll do this.
Right.
Okay. And the systems engineer was the action manager overall for that, and he would ride herd on them until he got it all.
Exactly.
And if he wanted help from R&DO, the systems engineer could pick up another matrix chart and find out exactly who in R&DO mm-hmm. could help the two guys solve their mutual problems.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And see, this is extended in a number of things, from instrumentation to welding problems between stages. You see, I mean, why? If one guy's got a welding problem on one stage, then you need to get the people that are specialists in welding. Maybe another stage has got this problem licked. Mm-hmm. But you said it very well. Here's another example of a functional thing that was so necessary. This shows the mission requirements. For example, it shows the payload required for 501. It shows that 501 will be an unmanned vehicle, and it says it's a launch vehicle and CSM development, 501 and 502. That's their primary mission. And it shows how the payload commitment has to increase. To stop a minute here and think in terms, I think, more like a mini historian. You see, the man's building 501, and it's so far down the track that you can't go back and let's say, reduce the weight of the S2 stage. But a report comes from Houston that the CSM is growing in weight. And fellas, the CSM is going to weigh 5,000 pounds more than we thought it was going to weigh. Now, the first one doesn't. But later on, we find out we've got to add these systems to the third and fourth flights and subsequent. So you're going to have to boost 5,000 pounds more. So while you were building 501, you were changing 503 and 504, perhaps going to a different material. This did occur. It wasn't in those particular stages. They would uprate the engine thrust. And all this sort of a mishmash. The more you think about it, you wonder how they kept it straight. But that's where this configuration management came in. We even have charts that show which vehicle, so-called first effectivity charts, shows when this change first